Das last segment on Hilchos Shtaris and contract halacha is about the concept of a non-compete. And we'll see, Mirtz Shem, that there's some fundamental Shtaris-related points that emerge from the discussion about a non-compete. And also, non-compete is an interesting case, because whereas with other Shtaris, generally speaking, when you have a shtar that is legally binding, the halacha will also recognize that. You're going to have let's say, for example, you go into a contract with somebody to sell something, and you sign a legally binding contract. So even though it was not constructed in a halachic manner, it's likely that the Beis Din would uphold such a contract. Beis Din does respect, there's a concept in halacha called satumta, where a contract which is legally binding and is the common practice among business people will be respected halachically as being a binding contract as well. And Kal v'chomer, certainly that when it comes to things which don't really need a contract in halacha, that certainly, and a verbal commitment is enough, such as regular employment contracts, there's no question that a legally binding contract will be valid. The big difference between that and non-competes is as follows. Non-competes have two very, very serious issues. First of all, non-competes are somewhat discouraged by the courts. Courts are very suspicious and they strongly discourage having non-competes which are too restrictive. And additionally, even if you did construct a non-compete which you thought was not so restrictive, the judge may decide, based on his own personal attitudes and biases, that he considers this non-compete to be restrictive. In other words, when it comes to the court system, as far as I understand, we don't have any clear rules and guidance exactly what type of non-compete is acceptable and which is not. There's a lot of discretion that's given, a lot of vagueness from the legal perspective. And being that that's the case, it's very difficult for a Beis Din to accept a legal non-compete as being halachically binding, since the Beis Din doesn't really know, when presented with any given non-compete, the Beis Din is not necessarily able to predict whether this non-compete will be upheld in court. So that's one big strike against a legal non-compete. The second big strike against legal non-compete is that you're trying to create something which is very difficult to create halachically. You're trying to create a situation where an individual will not be able to do a certain action. That, as we're going to discuss shortly, is something very difficult to accomplish halachically, and you may need more than a standard satumta. So halachic non-competes are basically structured where you have the terms of the non-compete, what you don't want the employee to do subsequent to his fire, laid off or whatever, and during the term of employment, you lay out those terms, what exactly you don't want him to do, what you want to prevent him from doing, and then you impose a penalty. You say that if he transgresses any of these clauses, then we will penalize him in the following manner. And we saw in previous shiurim that there's a concept of asmachta that we have to overcome, that penalties, generally speaking, have an issue of asmachta, but we do have a way out of that. We could say it happened in the Beis Din Chashuv, and we then go ahead and say that you're mekabel das yachid, you accept even a minority opinion, and hopefully all the convergence and confluence of all of these halachic methods that we use will be enough for a Beis Din to actually impose the penalty if the individual indeed transgressed the terms of the non-compete. I would point out that from my understanding, which is not the obviously legal understanding, but my understanding is that courts would not necessarily respect such a non-compete that has a penalty. So again, you have basically the legal non-compete, which only will work in court possibly, and the halachic non-compete, which may only work in Beis Din. may be good to have both of them, or if you choose a venue beforehand, that venue, you want to have a shtar that works in that venue, but it's important to understand that a legal non-compete has a good chance of not being upheld in Beis Din. That is in way of introduction. So again, when we're dealing with non-competes, when we're constructing a halachic non-compete, the components are we have to overcome asmachta, and then we also have to mekabel das yalad. So we have the components that we spoke about in the previous weeks are very necessary for a non-compete. Otherwise, a non-compete will probably not work, even if it's a halachic non-compete and it has that penalty that we discuss. Now I want to just briefly discuss what happens in a case of a legal non-compete. I'm going to discuss a case that we had. There was a brokerage firm, a mortgage brokerage firm, that had an employee that was working for them. The employee was not a salaried employee. He was working on commission. He did receive training from the firm, and for one reason or another, after a number of years, he wanted to leave the firm and actually transgressed the terms of his non-compete. He had a legal non-compete. He signed that he would not compete, and then he wanted to go ahead and compete. Now, there were reasons why he left. There was a whole backstory where he felt that they were doing things which was not right to him, but whatever, that's not really relevant to the question. It's relevant from an emotional and moral point of view, but it was not relevant to the halachic discussion. So we're going to focus specifically on the halachic question of whether that legal non-compete was binding, not on whether it was right or wrong what the person was doing, because that had a whole different angle to the case that has to be discussed. So we find in the Marma Kaimis, there's a Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer writes, he's a big source for a non-compete being binding, even if it was not constructed with the penalty that we discussed. Chassam Sofer has a case where Reuven trained Shimon to be a... Reuven did not train. Reuven gave Shimon a ksav, approbation, that which allowed Shimon to perform shchita. He gave him a ksav smicha for shchita, and he stipulated with Shimon at the time that Shimon should not compete in his area. Shimon should not do shchita in the area where Reuven was a shechet. And Shimon wanted, and the question was whether Shimon is bound by those terms. It's a one line of the long tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer writes that agreement is binding. The reason that the Chassam Sofer gives is as follows. He says, when Reuven went ahead and gave that ksav smicha to Shimon, he was basically working for Shimon. He was doing something for Shimon. He performed a service for Shimon. And the halacha is that if somebody who performs a service for you has the right to stipulate that he wants to get paid a certain amount. If parties agree, if you have an employee that does a service and he makes a certain price, sets a certain price for that service, then the employer will have to pay that price. Says the Chassam Sofer, Reuven, by giving this approbation to Shimon, was basically doing service for Shimon, and as such, he's entitled to payment for his services. And the payment that he stipulated was that Shimon was not going to compete. That was the payment for Reuven's service. So Reuven did a service, he gave him this ksav, and Shimon was going to pay him by not competing. Says the Chassam Sofer, since there's a service being performed, and there was a stipulated price for that service, that agreement is binding, and therefore Shimon cannot compete. That's what the Chassam Sofer writes. It's not 100% clear whether the Chassam Sofer means that we can forcibly stop Shimon from competing, or that he would have to pay some kind of monetary penalty. The simple reading of the Chassam Sofer is that Shimon would not be allowed to compete. That's the Chassam Sofer. So this seems to support very strongly the concept of a legal non-compete. If you go ahead and you sign a legal non-compete where you performed a service, for example, you trained an employee to in a certain field, and you made an agreement with him that after that he's not allowed to compete for a certain period, we could make the same argument. Here you went ahead and you trained him, so you performed a service for him. You were sort of his employee, so to speak. It's the opposite of what it really is, but the employer is sort of becoming the employee's employee because he's working for him and training him. And the stipulated price that the employee has to pay for that service is that he's not allowed to compete. So you could, it sounds like the Chassam Sofer would be a very strong makar to argue that a legal non-compete is halachically binding because of this employer-employee concept. However, we have to understand what the Chassam Sofer means. Like I said before, does the Chassam Sofer mean that Beis Din will forcibly stop the employee from competing? Will they instruct him, you are not allowed to compete? Or will they tell him, if you want to compete, you have to buy yourself out of this arrangement? What's the question? The question is as follows. In Halacha, we have a concept known as Poyel Yochel Lachzor B'Chatzi Ayin. If Reuven is working for, agrees to work for Shimon for a certain period of time, Reuven is allowed to back out of that agreement. So, in this case, Reuven performed a service for Shimon. Reuven, the employer, trained Shimon to do to be good at this field. Shimon then obligated himself; he will not go ahead and compete. So the question is: you're right. Reuven performed the service for Shimon, and Shimon has to pay him for that service. And the payment, we said, is that he has to hold himself back from competing. He has to abstain from competing. The question is, can Shimon back out of that obligation? Shimon went ahead and obligated himself to withhold himself, to abstain from competing with Reuven. Can he then go ahead and say, you're right, I obligated myself to do that, but I want to back out of that obligation. Just like if I would be obligate myself to work for you, I will be able to back out of that obligation. Maybe if I obligated myself not to work, I would also be able to back out of that obligation. So there's a few angles. One angle we're discussing is Poel Yochel Lachzor B'Chatzi Ayin. Like we see in the Maariv HaKoyimus, that's not such an easy approach to take, to allow Shimon to back out of an obligation to refrain from competing against Reuven. Because we see in the Maariv HaKoyimus that where both parties are working for each other, where it's not a one-sided relationship, where employee is working for employer, and the employer is not doing anything in return, in that case, the employee could back out because of the concept of Poel Yochel Lachzor B'Chatzi Ayin. But where both parties are doing something, in this case, the employer trained the employee, and the employee then obligated himself not to compete, in that case, the Sma writes that the concept of Poel Yochel Lachzor B'Chatzi Ayin is not operative. But there's another two issues that we have to overcome. First of all, an employee has to have a kinyan which makes him work for the employer. So, again, the Chassam Sofer says that the employer performed a service for the employee, and because of that, the employee is then obligated to refrain from competing. The question is, what obligates the employee to do that? Usually when somebody performs a service for you, you have to pay him money. If you want to give him anything besides for money, we see in the Maariv HaKoyimus in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Shin Lamed Beis that the employee is not necessarily obligated, I'm sorry, the employer is not necessarily obligated to give any other form of payment. So in this case, Reuven worked for Shimon, Reuven the employer, again, we're switching the roles over here, so you have to recognize that the roles are to a certain extent being switched around from a halachic point of view. Reuven, the employer, is working for Shimon by training him in, and Shimon has to pay him back by not competing. The question is whether that obligation is binding, and we're introducing a question that perhaps that obligation is not binding because Shimon never obligated himself effectively not to compete, because all Reuven did was perform a service for which he owes money. Now the question is, does that money that he would have owed in lieu of the non-compete, the money that he would have owed for Reuven's training, is that money enough to force, could that money be switched for the obligation not to compete? That's the second question. So we see in the Maariv HaKoyimus that perhaps that is a bind, that would not invalidate the non-compete. Because the halachic underpinnings of this are a little bit complicated, but basically the general concept is that money paid for service is a binding method of a contract, and again, since Reuven worked by training in Shimon, and Shimon should have had to pay him money for that work, and in lieu of the money, Shimon saying, I won't compete, that exchange of not being obligated to pay that money and in lieu of that not competing, it seems to be a halachically valid exchange which would obligate and prevent Shimon from competing. The third issue that we have with this arrangement is as follows. We bring down the Maamar Mekayim that there's a Beis David. The Beis David writes that there was a custom in those days where people paid each, where competing merchants would pay each other not to compete on for a specific piece of merchandise. And the Beis David's question was whether that agreement is binding. Beis David writes that we have in halacha a concept called employment agreements. You could hire somebody to be your employee, and there's valid methods of creating a binding contract to a certain extent. We said this is halacha pel yachalasuboy, but to a certain extent, there could be validly binding methods of creating such a contract that where the employee is obligated to a certain extent to do the work. Says the Beis David, and because of that, when the employee does the work, the employer is obligated to pay him for that work. Says the Beis David, when an individual obligates himself not to do work, that is not similar to the concept of an individual obligating himself to positively do work. Obligating yourself not to do work, obligating yourself to refrain from doing work, is not considered employment. And it falls under a totally different halachic category, where you need other methods of acquisition which would not be necessarily follow the guidelines of regular employment acquisitions and methods of execution. According to the Beis David, who takes an approach and views the obligation to refrain from doing work or competing as being a totally different arrangement from an arrangement of obligating yourself to do work, we would have to ask ourselves whether indeed it's even possible for a person to obligate himself not to compete in halacha. Since the Beis David is saying that when a person obligates himself not to compete, it's not included in regular employment, we have to question whether such an obligation is bechlal possible. Is it within the realm of possibility, halachically, to be obligated not to compete? So, and additionally, we show in the Maamar Mekayimus that the Rashba in Bava Basra seems to support the contention of the Beis David that obligating yourself not to do something is not something which seems that it's not in the realm of possibility halachically to create such an obligation. So to keep it simple, let's just try to recap. We have a Chassam Sofer who seems to give a strong foundation to a legal non-compete, even without a penalty being imposed halachically. What we're questioning about the Chassam Sofer is it possible that the Chassam Sofer meant that you are obligated not to compete, since it doesn't seem to be readily apparent that halachically you can obligate yourself not to do something. And the source for that would be this Beis David, who seems to indicate that to obligate yourself not to do something is a very difficult thing to do halachically. So that being said, again, we had the other alternative reading and understanding of the Chassam Sofer, where the employee would have to buy himself out of the non-compete. Beis Din couldn't force the employee not to compete. Beis Din could tell the employee, if you want to transgress the terms of your non-compete, you have to pay the cash value of whatever that non-compete is worth. Because, like we see in the Maamar Mekayimus and Shin Lamed Beis, the Poskim write that even if Reuven worked for Shimon, and Reuven stipulated that Shimon has to pay him back with an item, he has to give him, let's say, a car, even though Shimon is allowed to back out and not give him that car, but he has to pay the cash value of that car because that's what we consider to be fair payment for that service that Reuven provided to Shimon. So in this case, Reuven worked for Shimon. Again, he trained Shimon to do his job, and the payment for that work was supposed to be the legal non-compete. So even if we say that the legal non-compete is not binding and he's allowed to go ahead and compete, he would have to pay the cash value of whatever that legal non-compete is worth, because that's how he valued Reuven's training. He valued Reuven's training as being equal in value to a legal non-compete. We need to go a little bit further. In halacha, we have a concept of marufia. So in this case, where we have Reuven trying to enforce a non-compete against Shimon, so there's always, every non-compete really has two components. We could call them the fair component and the unfair component. The unfair component, quote-unquote, we don't really mean it's unfair, but the unfair component is where Reuven wants to stop Shimon from doing anything in that field. Then there's the other component of the non-compete. Reuven says to Shimon, look, I'm not going to tie you up and put you in jail. But what I do want is that you shouldn't take away my clients. Clients that either came to my company or came to you when you were the employee of my company. Don't take away those clients. Go ahead and find yourself your own clients. Don't take the clients that I had. So in Halacha, we see a concept of Marufia, which we brought down in the Maamar Mekaymus, which is not discussing employee-employer, it's discussing two individuals. You have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has a business, and he has clients, he has customers, steady customers that come and use his services or buy from his establishment. Shimon wants to compete with Reuven. So there's two components. There's Shimon taking clients or customers who are not committed to Reuven, and then you have Shimon attempting to poach Reuven's customers, and going directly to Reuven's customers and trying to get Reuven's customers to leave Reuven and go to Shimon. That's called Marufia. And in the Maamar Mekaymus it says that there's places where Beis Din will enforce Dinei Marufia, there's places where Beis Din will not enforce Dinei Marufia. Pesachei Choshen rules that, in his opinion, Bezmanenu, Beis Din does enforce Dinei Marufia. In other words, if Shimon wants to poach clients and customers from Reuven by approaching them directly and asking them to come to him, that would be usher. Shimon would not be allowed to do that. Now, frequently, when it comes to non-competes, we have the simple marufia, where Shimon, the employee, wants to go ahead and take away customers that came to Reuven all the years, even before Shimon was there, that Shimon now happens to have a relationship with. So that obviously falls under the category of Marufia, because Shimon is now an individual, regardless of whether he was employee of Reuven, he's now an individual who's trying to poach Reuven's customers. However, there's another case which is not as clear-cut. There's a situation where Shimon doesn't want to go ahead and poach customers that Reuven had his own personal relationship with. Shimon was a salesperson for Reuven. Reuven hired Shimon as a salesperson. Shimon works as a salesperson. He created relationships for many years when he worked for the company, when he worked for Reuven. Those people would come back to the company, but at this point, Shimon's leaving the company, and he's arguing as follows. He's saying, these are not your customers and your clients. These are not your marufia. These are my marufia. I created this relationship. These are my customers. I should be able to take these customers. Whereas Reuven argues, no, you created this relationship when you were my employee. So whatever you did belongs to me. There's a concept called Yad Poel Ki Yad Baal Bayis. Whatever the Poel does, it's considered as though it was done by the Baal Bayis. So while Shimon was working for Reuven, and creating these relationships with these clients and these customers, he was basically acting as an agent of Reuven, and it's as though Reuven created these relationships. Since Yad Poel Ki Yad Baal Bayis, so therefore, perhaps, Shimon should not be allowed to poach these clients, even clients with whom he created the relationship, since it's as though, halachically, we will view it as though Reuven created that relationship. That is the big question that comes up a lot of times, and this would not really be dependent on actually executing a legal non-compete. This would be a halacha which would be a fundamental halacha, the default position which we would take, which would be that Shimon would not be able to poach Reuven's clients. And now we have to discuss,
what are Reuven's clients? Are people that Shimon created a relationship with, are those people considered Reuven's clients? So like we said, there's a concept of Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais. Now the question is, what does Reuven have to give Shimon in order to create this relationship of Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais? And what does Shimon's job have to be? So the standard Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais is a situation where Reuven pays Shimon a salary, and Shimon is a salesperson and works for a salary. Now, the question is, let's say Reuven never paid Shimon a salary. Reuven just, like we spoke before, he trained Shimon in his field. Perhaps it's as though Reuven paid Shimon a salary. Reuven did work for Shimon, and that work should be considered as though Reuven paid a salary to Shimon, and therefore Shimon should have the position of being a Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais. Another question is, do we apply Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais to a situation where Shimon was working Shimon was getting a commission? Shimon, like we said, Shimon was not getting a salary. Shimon was getting a commission, meaning he got a certain percentage of every deal. So perhaps there's no the concept of Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais only applies where the poyel is working exclusively for the baal bais. But where the poyel stands to benefit from his own work, where the poyel is receiving a benefit and he's receiving a percentage of the profits, like a commission, perhaps we cannot apply the concept of Yad Poyel Ki Yad Baal Bais, because the poyel is not working exclusively for the baal bais. The poyel is working for himself and for the baal bais. The baal bais gets a percentage of the profits, and the poyel gets a percentage of the profits. That's the question that we have to ask ourselves. So, without getting into the nitty-gritty of the halacha, the Rashba that we quoted in the Ma'ar Mekaymus seems to indicate that the concept of Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais applies even where the poyol is earning a percentage of the money. Why? Because the Rashba discusses a case of shutfim. The Rashba says that where you have two partners who let's say perform a service, so you have two barbers, they want to go out and split their profits. So the Rashba writes that the method to create a halakhically binding partnership is they can create this verbally. Because if Reuven tells Shimon, I'll give you half of my profits, and Shimon tells Reuven, I'll give you half of my profits. So when Reuven works, he's paying a salary to Shimon. He's working for Shimon. And now, when Shimon works, half of his work should go to Reuven because of Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais. So you see clearly in the Rashba that Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais applies even where Reuven, where Shimon the Poyol, is not going to be the one who exclusively benefits from his work. So therefore, in my view, the concept of Marufia would apply in this case that we discussed in the question, where Reuven trained Shimon to work in his field. Reuven was basically paying Shimon a salary by performing work for him. And Shimon is Yad Poyol Ki Yad Baal Bais. So Shimon will have an obligation that clients which he developed a relationship with will have to a certain extent, there will be Reuven's Marufia. And it may be usher for Shimon to poach these clients from Reuven. Before we leave the topic of non-competes, I want to just point out something very important. We spoke about a halachic non-compete. Now, there's a very big danger with halachic non-competes, which is as follows. Bederech klal, when people sign a shtar, In the contemporary society, frequently people, you have a shtar with 50 pages, you'll sign the last page and consider it done. Halachically, when you sign a shtar, you have to sign every page. Now, many times we can overlook that because, and the reason why you have to sign every page is because the other party could say, I never intended to sign this contract. I signed something else completely. I signed the last page and some other contract. So, But usually you can overcome this issue because usually contracts are emailed back and forth. So everybody knows what the signature is attached to, what it pertains to. However, with non-competes, typically what happens is employees don't like to sign non-competes. The only reason that they sign non-competes is because the employer puts pressure on them. And that pressure is usually face-to-face. So the employer will come over to the non-compete with a big stack of papers, an employment agreement, non-compete, all kinds of other things mixed in, some good things, some bad things. They'll tell the employee, come sign on the dotted line, and we're good. So I'll have his shtar constructed by Beis Din with all the things that we spoke about. He'll have a Beis Din Choshev and Kabbalah Stas Yachid, everything that he needs. But he's going to be missing this a very important thing. The employee is only going to sign the last page. And when the employee only signs the last page, since these contracts rely so much on, like we spoke about in the other week, so they rely on the concept of Edisa. Because really, there was no Beis Din Chashuv. There was no Kinyan even performed. He just signed on the dotted line. So the only way the contract works is because there's a very strong admission that he did do a Kinyan in the Beis Din Chashuv. So even if everybody admits that there was no Kinyan in the Beis Din Chashuv, it might still be binding. But that's only if the contract has all the strength that we're able to give it, the strength of Edisa. But if the contract will not work as far as Edisa is concerned, because he didn't sign, we don't have a signature on every page, and there's no admission anywhere over here that this happened in the Beis Din Chashuv, because he signed the last page, which is just a signature page, right? And that doesn't constitute an admission to anything at all, because it's not attached to anything. So in that case, we can't use the concept of Edisa. Everybody agrees that there was no Beis Din Chashuv. We know that there's no Beis Din Chashuv. Beis Din Chashuv probably doesn't even exist. So it's very, very hard for Beis Din to take a position that such a contract is binding. We're missing a lot of the necessary components that such a contract has to have in order to be binding. And even if the parties admit to having signed this stack of papers, that's not necessarily going to accomplish anything for them. So it's very, very important when you do a halachic non-compete to make sure that your employee signs every single page of the document.